Hi, welcome to Civic's Change Agent Chat, episode 24. During these chats, we speak with change agents who are working to create a better healthcare system for us all. I'm Stephanie Spriggs with the Center for Improving Value in Healthcare, or as we like to call it, Civic. In this chat, Taman Osborne Roberts, Civic's former CMO, is speaking with researchers from Rice University, the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston School of Public Health, and RAND Corporation, who used co-APCD data to understand how hospitals are paid by commercial health plans, the different types of billing contracts negotiated, their prevalence, and how the terms of these contracts vary between markets. During this chat, we learn how claims data allowed them to analyze these contracts and what the researchers discovered about the healthcare market. We recorded this chat in March 2018. Thanks for listening and enjoy the chat.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Thank you once again for joining Civic's Monthly Change Agent Chat, or for you first-timers, so welcome, welcome, welcome. As many of you know, and for those of you who don't, I'm Taman Osborne Roberts, Civic's Chief Medical Officer, and your host for today's Change Agent Chat. Now, before we get started, as always, there's just a few housekeeping items to mention. One is that the phone lines are muted, and we'll be using the question and answer feature to field questions and allow you to make comments on the discussion. So as you're listening, you know, please take advantage of that. In addition, the questions posed over the course of the chat will be answered for the most part at the end during the question and answer session, which will be the last 10 minutes or so of our half an hour time slot. And additionally, as always, this webinar is being recorded and is going to be posted to the Civic site so you can access this information again at any time without cost. Now, I'll shortly be introducing our guests for today, but I'd like to discuss a bit about the reason we're all here: data and information. As we're all aware, data has become the center of our modern existence. The world's largest and most powerful companies, Google, Facebook, and the like, are organized around collecting and sharing data. In addition, most of us carry small, magical data portals called smartphones in our pockets, and we use them to access others' data and to share our own data with the rest of the world, sometimes every minute of every day. And if you're like me, you may even wear one on your wrist. However, for a range of reasons that we're not going to explore today, data use in healthcare up until recently has been positively ancient, right out of the Bronze Age. Byzantine, I say, Byzantine. And this is such a loss, for as we all know, the most important part of data is not the numbers, but the people and the good that leveraging those numbers can do for those people. To quote the speaker, author, and social relationship researcher Brené Brown, maybe stories are just data with a soul. And it's you, our partners, that bring that soul into the data supplied by Civic, working to change the personal stories of our patients and help move Colorado and its people forward. As always, we thank you very much for your partnership. Today, we'll be speaking with Dr. Ellery Weber and Dr. Eric Floyd from the University of Texas Health Sciences Center at Houston School of Public Health and the RAND Corporation, who've used Colorado APCD data to understand how hospitals are paid by commercial health plans, the different types of billing contracts negotiated, the prevalence of such contracts, and how the terms of such contracts vary between markets. Dr. Weber, Dr. Floyd, please, if you'd introduce yourselves and then take it away.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for inviting us here. Thanks for this opportunity to talk with you all. We're really excited. My name is Ellery Weber. I'm at the University of Texas School of Public Health in Houston. I'll let Eric introduce himself, but we have two colleagues on this project who are not here, Chapin White, Dr. Chapin White, who's at RAND, and then a colleague of mine in Houston, Youngrin Kim.
Fantastic.
All right, so my name's Eric. I met Ellery in Houston. Previously, I had been at Rice University. I just recently, about a year and a half ago, moved to University of California, San Diego. And I sit in business school. So most of my research, or a lot of it, has to do with business. I sit in accounting and finance group. So this project ended up being sort of a collaboration between me on the business side and sort of Ellery and Chapin on the healthcare side. So, how we met, and it's been a pleasure ever since.
Fantastic. It's lovely to meet both of you, and thank you for joining us here today. So why don't you each start out with really telling us a little bit about the nature of your project, why it's important to the healthcare of Coloradans in general, to the triple aim, which as we all know is lower cost, higher quality care, and greater satisfaction. You know, tell us the story of how you came to be interested in this question and how you began to move through it.
So, it's, I guess, a story that began, the research began through conversations I was having both with Chapin and with Eric, and I believe Chapin and I were talking at a conference maybe back in 2014 or 2015, mm-hmm. And we were talking about some private insurance claims data that I had access to at the time that was pretty unique. And it really enabled us to see this interesting relationship between prices and charges and then some other variables in the data that I had, like length of stay and procedural codes. And it enabled us to look across hospitals and see all of these great relationships. And Eric and I were also having conversations at the time. We met at a conference, like he said, in Houston, where he was presenting a paper about price transparency. And so he and I were having kind of concurrent conversations about price transparency at the time. And we all came together to start talking about what I think are some of the big unknowns right now in healthcare in general, but certainly in health economics, which is my field, and health services research, which is how, as you mentioned, insurance companies, private insurers, private payers, private health plans, and hospitals in particular, but how they negotiate and contract and bargain to pay for different services. So this is like the holy grail, I think, for many people, certainly among us. And you had asked me before, you know, is this a passion? And, you know, is it a personal story? And it didn't really come necessarily out of a personal interaction I had, but it is a passion in the sense that it's this, like, you know, question that we know so little about that really is capturing our imagination and our mind, and I think a lot the minds of a lot of our colleagues. And we know a lot about how the public insurers pay hospitals for procedures, Medicare and Medicaid, because those payments are either in federal registries or state registries or their law, but we just know far less about how private insurers pay. And, you know, there's this great health economist who passed away recently from Princeton, Uwe Reinhardt, and he wrote this paper about a decade ago called Chaos Behind a Veil of Secrecy. And I think that's the way a lot of us think about it, that there's this, you know, this chaos behind this veil, and we really wanted realize that there was this opportunity to peer behind this veil and learn more. So we started having this conversation and we started asking, you know, is there a way to use claims data to back out how insurance companies contract for hospital services? And I can talk more about this later when we get to the Colorado data of what exactly we're doing. But we started looking broadly for where there might be data available. The data that I had wasn't useful except to look at some specific instances, but where we could see at the broad market level what private insurance companies, what we could learn about contracts at the market level. So is that the story you were looking for?
Oh, no, absolutely. And it sounds like, you know, while there might be a slight utilitarian bent to it, it really is just, you know, kind of the seed of intellectual, you know, inquiry that kind of led you to this in a really kind of beautifully, almost pure kind of a way.
Yeah. Eric, is that anything?
And I came from a similar sort of approach, but slightly different. Mine came, I actually wrote my thesis on price transparency. And one of the things that came up is, you know, I was doing some research, you know, I had a data set at that time that actually had what we call in the paper actual prices, or sort of final negotiated prices. And something came up that, you know, I needed to kind of figure out how these prices were set. And so I was actually calling a bunch of insurance companies and hospitals, and sort of what I thought I knew about how these were done, I was getting a lot of different answers. And so when we think about what I do in accounting and finance, it's a world that's interested in things like contracting and transparency. We kind of have an idea, a more transparent idea of how these things are actually done. And so what fascinated me that, you know, I ended up meeting with Ellery about is, even after talking to people and trying to get an idea, I just didn't know. Like, I didn't have a good sense, even institutionally, how these contracts are being negotiated, sort of how different types of contracts exist sort of at a grand scale throughout the economy. So it was just fascinating to just dig in there and just try to understand what we just didn't know, that sort of the veil that Ellery talks about. Gotcha. And so we sort of jointly decided that maybe we'd peer behind it, which, you know, or try to at least, right?
Get the camel's nose under the tent, as it were.
Exactly.
No, got it. So talk a little bit about the project in greater detail and really how you began to start to use claims data, specifically the Colorado APCD claims data, to work your way into the question and maybe about some of the conclusions that you've come up with.
Yeah, so let me start with what we know in general before we even started this paper about contracting between private insurances and hospitals, and then I can work my way into how we came and found Colorado.
You got the veil for us.
Okay. So what is the limit, what is generally accepted is that there's three main types of contracts. There's certainly far more, and there's a lot of complexity to contracts, and we're not even beginning to touch on all of that complexity. But it's generally agreed that there's three main types. There's contracts where they pay based on discounted charges. So they take the amount that hospitals have charged and insurers will negotiate a discount off of those charges. Yeah. There are contracts that pay per diem, so they'll pay a certain amount every day. And then there are contracts that will pay fixed rates. So if you have a certain procedure, a birth or a hip replacement, they'll pay a certain amount. Contracts are broad and they happen at the hospital payer level. So a contract can encompass many of these different subtypes within one contract. And like I said, plus many other complexities that I'm not even beginning to touch on. So we were trying to figure out if, you know, based on those three main agreed upon types, we could back out a little bit about what's the prevalence of these. Do we see any patterns that some of these types of contracts are more likely to happen in certain markets or at certain at certain procedures or this sort of thing? And we started looking for what kind of, if we could find data that would enable us to do that. And really this is, like you said at the beginning in your introduction, you know, data is a new thing to healthcare researchers. And the fact that there's newly available data is only what's making this project and many other projects possible. And so as more all-payer claims databases become available, as more claims data, such as through the Healthcare Cost Institute, HCCI, out of Washington, D.C., becomes available, more research like this is possible. And we alighted on this Colorado APCD because it's really one of the few APCDs at the state level that both has variation, is big enough to provide variation. You guys have a lot of insurers, you have a lot of different payers, yeah, and a lot of different types of markets, enough of a population to provide good variation. So you're not as small as New Hampshire or Vermont, where we really couldn't, that what the data weren't big enough to provide what we needed. But also there are other states that are just oddballs, as we've come to understand through interviews, qualitative interviews and conversations we have with people on the payer side and on the hospital side. So for instance, we hear from a state like New York that they pay mostly through fixed rate. So we wouldn't see any variation if we were using data from a state like that. Other states, maybe smaller states, just pay based on Medicare, or they pay based on discounted charges. So we really, Colorado was kind of the perfect medium for us.
Welcome to the Wild West.
Yeah, exactly, the Wild Wild West, and beautiful, could give us an excuse to come visit. So that was a motivating factor behind why we applied and got use of the Colorado APCD data. So to talk a little more in depth about our research then, what we're trying to do is this is really like an exploratory, a bit of a methodological data to say, can we use this claims data to back out these contracts? Can we see, that there are a certain fraction of, you know, fixed rate contracts or discounted charge contracts or per diem contracts? Do we see that discounted charge contracts happen in a, you know, like I said, in a particular procedural area, maybe OBGYN procedures more often than other types of procedures? Those are the kinds of questions we're asking. And we're using what we think is a novel algorithm to try to back out these contracts from the claims data. And I can go into detail about it, but it probably would take a lot more time than we have. But that's the broad... Yeah. And so the other thing that we're doing, that and the other reason that Colorado data is so useful, is that you guys also have, as being the APCD, Medicaid data and Medicare data. And so we're trying to use especially the Medicaid data to as a validation check again for our algorithm. We think we know more about how Medicaid pays, and certainly we know how Medicare pays. So we want to use our algorithm on that data and see, okay, do we actually see that when we run our algorithm on Medicaid data, we get a large fraction of fixed rate payments? Because that's how we think Medicaid pays. Certainly, that's how we know Medicare pays. They pay by DRG. Did I answer all of your questions?
I think you did. Dr. Floyd, anything to add?
No, I think that's most of it. I think to go any further, we'd have to kind of talk about the algorithm. But certainly, my experience sort of echoes what sort of Ellery was talking about. We have had a lot of our sort of priors about the type of contracts that exist actually came from sort of extensive talks with different people in different industry and sort of getting a sense of, you know, talking to people in Maine, talking to a lot of insurance companies, talking to people in New York. You know, Ellery's also done some other work where they've done a sort of more formal qualitative kind of approach. And we kind of started to see these patterns, though we also saw that a lot of people were saying different things. So the point of this project was to say, listen, we have a lot of different sort of anecdotal accounts of what's happening. What's the benefit of being academics is we can try to take a lot of anecdotal accounts and then go see the data and see what the data tell us, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously there's benefits to both approach, and we felt that this type of analysis would be a nice way to complement sort of the things you hear, right? Because as we talked about before we were here, you know, if you're kind of in the trenches and you're in the foxhole, as you said, you tend to see what you see, and you know, you see your market and you become familiar with that. This was a chance, especially in a state like Colorado that has a variation, to see it at a broader scale and to get a better idea of trends or patterns across a larger data set. Does that make sense, Hillary?
Yeah. And I also to answer Taman's question about what are some of our findings, at a very broad level, we found so far, and this is still preliminary, but we've been able to classify a portion of your inpatient hospital claims data under these contract subtypes. And so we found that about 40% are fixed rates, 40% are discounted charges, and the remaining about 16% are per diems.
Okay.
That's what we found. That's what we found so far.
Important to note, like our priors going in were that discounted contract charge contract would not be that common, right? I mean, if you kind of look at the academic literature right now, it's sort of replete with a lot of studies that sort of make claims about what contract types likely exist without any rigorous evidence behind it. So I'd say in a lot of ways, the idea was we wouldn't even see 40% discounted charges. Yet we did, and we can actually go into the data and check sort of almost by hand and see that these are in fact these types of contracts. And so it's just interesting to see it on that scale.
Got it. So you really found some, I suppose null hypothesis sorts of, moments in there just based on what prior research prior papers had shown, even though it may not have been rigorous.
And I think it's interesting because I think now is probably a good time, you know, since we're talking about different contracts, to talk about why we might care, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that, you know, healthcare from my perspective, coming from more of a accounting and finance or from an economic side that's theoretically interested in contract choice and so forth, is interesting to see that kind of variation because, you know, at least from a theoretical perspective, we might believe that, you know, contract structure, like a discounted charge or a fixed rate, at least has sort of two effects that we might care about. First is that there's these sort of different incentives, that a different contract choice might provide different incentives to providers, right? We've seen that with Medicare, which Ellery and I were talking about before, where, you know, these prospective fixed rate payment schemes provide different incentives than fee-for-service. We might see that with these type of contracts as well. Another reason that we think about in contracting literature is to what extent do these contracts tell us something different about how hospitals and payers might share risk. In other words, a discounted charge contract might impose a different type of risk on a hospital than a fixed rate, right? Because a fixed rate might stipulate an upfront payment, which means the subsequent complexity doesn't matter as much. Those are things that we've been thinking about and we haven't quite gotten a final answer on, but we're starting to go forward and trying to use this type of analysis to think about it.
Well, so it sounds like there's a few places you could potentially go with this. One would be to, you know, if you have an understanding of what the contract types in the market are, you know, you can kind of back into an understanding of you know, the dynamics, you know, that, you know, for say, you know, hospitals, you know, might be using in making their decisions. You know, if you see a particular prevalence, you know, you could then maybe, you know, do some surveying and, you know, some focus grouping and see if you can determine, for instance, well, you know, we're seeing this prevalence in your contracting. Why is this something you want to do or not? But it allows you to even get to that question, which you couldn't without the data.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Eric was mentioning, so I think, yeah, he was, you asked us before and we kind of punted until now on how this might affect Coloradans and, you know, the triple aim. But, and again, you know, this is all right now, we were just interested in this from, as you mentioned, an academic perspective, a curiosity perspective. You know, we have seen in, like Medicare, in the early 80s, when Medicare switched, this is what Eric was just talking about, they used to reimburse hospitals on a cost plus basis. They would pay pretty much what hospitals claimed they were a patient would cost them, plus a little bit more as a margin. And then in the early 80s, they switched and started paying prospectively to the PPS system. And you saw changes in outcomes. You saw that as a result of hospitals now being paid prospectively, patients were discharged faster and earlier. You also saw, interestingly, that mortality went down, even though, despite the fact that they were being discharged earlier. So, you know, maybe these changes in how payers pay has an impact on people's health, on actual outcomes. Maybe it has an impact on the total price that they end up paying, either out of pocket or that the, you know, the payer ends up paying. But, you know, like you said, we can go in and start asking hospitals, okay, do you find that? Will you change your behavior? Will you try to influence the behavior of your physicians as these contracts shift and change? So I think I might have just repeated what you both were saying, but that's sometimes the way I think about it.
No, I think that was a little different, and I think, you know, maybe clearer than the question I was asking, so thank you. So that actually leads me into a kind of a great spot, and then we'll kind of go to some of the questions we're getting. So I would encourage those of you who haven't posed any questions, please type those into the chat or the Q&A. Really, what are next steps? Where do you anticipate going from the answers you've gotten to further questions?
Larry, I can take this. I think that stems directly off of what we just talked about. I think that from an academic perspective, there's a lot of theoretical reasons that we might care about different contract choice, right? And Ellery touched on those. I think that, you know, to be able to even address those questions, we would need to be able to observe what type of contract choice, which is kind of what this study is attempting to do. So the obvious next steps is to try to see exactly that. Can we figure out why we see this variation? Can we try to figure out what the consequences of those variation are in a little bit more rigorous way, right? And we have some ideas. Now we can hopefully use what we've done so far to try to say something about that, right? I mean, that's what you want to do. Use the data to sort of see whether or not, you know, your theory of the world potentially supports it, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fair, Ellery?
Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, we've been talking about, you know, again, this is very exploratory of trying to use some more rigorous machine learning methods to back out from the data the different kinds of contracts and then associate contracts with market characteristics or procedural characteristics or things like Eric said that might predict these contracts or see what the outcomes are on the flip side of that, as I was just talking about, but in a more at a higher level, and you know, and then simultaneously pursue this qualitative interview side to try to dig down into the because that's, you know, when we talk to people, people are really interested in this topic, but there's always so many exceptions. And we talk to hospital CEOs and we talk to payer CEOs or, you know, people who are in charge of these contracts, and they say, well, but there's this and there's this and, you know, you're not factoring into this. And so we know this is a messy area to do research in, and we're trying to learn as much as we can too. So
sounds like you're really laying groundwork, and then, you know, you can move from what you've seen to some really interesting questions to start to actually, like you said, rigorously validate, you know, what, you know, or, you know, perhaps, you know, challenge what you've been seeing.
Absolutely. I think it goes both ways, right? You want to see whether or not it supports it, and you also, you have to be open to the idea that it says something different than what you thought, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's research, right?
Yeah. Our research should be done, right?
So, looks like we have a couple of questions here. First question, in what contract category do y'all classify value-based or value-oriented contracts?
So, that's a great question. I would say that it doesn't fall into any of those exactly. And it really depends on how you're, maybe the person who wrote the question can clarify a little bit about what they meant about value-based. But when I think about value-based contracts, I think about something that's more a bundled payment or something that's tied to an outcome. And we are not addressing that here. And like I said, there's many, many complexities, and that's certainly one of them. We've heard stories from payers that some contracts specify quality payments, where at the broad hospital level, a transfer will be made at the end of the year if certain benchmarks are met. We cannot see that in our data at all, because we don't see any transfers between a hospital and a payer. This is all claims-based data. So certainly we're missing that from our algorithm. As another example of something that we can't capture, you hear that in these contracts there are, you know, these stop-loss provisions or outlier thresholds where, you know, if charges exceed some level, a contract can switch perhaps from being fixed rate to being discounted charges. So if you go for a hip replacement and all of a sudden you become a very expensive patient and your charges get to be really expensive, you will be an outlier and you will be paid in a different way. We can't really see that right now either, or at least we're not trying to back that out from our data. So those are just two examples of what we cannot see. And certainly we'd love to try to figure all of that out eventually.
Sounds like maybe another time or another team.
Or another life, yeah.
Good question, because it also, those type of questions tell you how much more like we need to learn, how much opportunity there is to learn more and more. Right? So this is like, just to add, like, this is intentionally a simplified experiment, right? When we start somewhere, we like to think in sort of the most parsimonious way possible before we add complexity. So we chose this dichotomy because it's how we've been talking to industry and how we've been thinking about it. But it's also a nice way to summarize, like you said, a very broad spectrum of contract into something digestible, right?
No, got it. Makes sense. Another question. What do you see as the drivers for decisions about types of contracting?
The drivers for decisions about types of contracting.
Those that people will be choosing.
Yeah, so I think this goes back to what Eric was saying, so maybe he wants to weigh in on this too, but we think of all contracts as really a tension between between risk sharing. So if it's a fixed rate contract such that the payer is paying one amount for the whole procedure, not a bundle package, but you know, the hip replacement as a whole, not including the therapy after, the physical therapy after, or the pre-checkups before the surgery, but the surgical hospital side of it, a fixed rate pays that one amount for that hip replacement, then all of the risk is on the hospital side. Because if charges or costs or however you want to phrase it, if it's a very expensive patient, they're still going to be paid the same amount. And so the hospital is bearing a lot more of that risk. And on the flip side, if it's discounted charges, the payer is bearing the risk because the hospital, in some sense, the charges can be whatever they want, and the contract is that they're going to pay a fixed percentage of that. So we see that the factors that affect which contract is ultimately chosen has to do with the bargaining over that risk. Who has more ability to share the risk burden in that particular at that particular moment, say, in the contracting? Does that answer the question, Eric? Am I?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the right way to think about it. And I think it's kind of interesting. Just as a side point, I was actually having a really nice conversation with a very smart contract theorist the other day. And a contract theorist in our world is someone that really sits down and tries to model these contracting nuances, the incentives and the risk and so forth and so on. And, as of right now in economics, there isn't a ton of literature that would predict the type of variation that we see in contract choice, at least in our data set. So this is also very interesting from a theoretical exploration too, to understand why. And that is the million-dollar question. As of right now, I think it's sort of Ellery's intuition is probably the best we have, that this is a risk-sharing story, that for, these two types of contracts impose different risk on hospitals and payers, and that's just like final price or negotiated prices negotiated, this is jointly negotiated as well, the sort of form. The only other thing to add is, sort of maybe the incentive piece that we talked about, that, ex post, these types of contracts might impose different incentives on hospitals, right? Discounted charges might incentivize sort of less cost constraints than a fixed rate would, right? So that's another reason that we might think about as well.
Okay, got it. And one last quick question, because I think we're a little bit over. When will the research be published?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's the really important question.
Soon, we hope, very soon. But we're happy to share working papers or talk further with anybody if they'd like to email us. We're always happy to talk to anybody about this.
Yeah, you heard it here first. If you want more, contact Civic and we'll get you in touch. So I just wanted to go ahead and thank both of you so much for taking the time to talk with us today and to really share this incredibly exciting place that you're both beginning to enter and to bring data to in a way that it really doesn't seem like it's been done before. May you continue to have great luck in opening up the curtains and letting in the sunlight, as it were. I think there's a lot of interesting questions here. I'd like to say thank you also to everyone who joined us today for our Change Agent Chat to listen to the amazing things that some of our partners are doing with our data. I'd like to remind everyone that the next chat is April 10th, and that will be with Dispatch Health. Until then, take care. Good luck using data, and we'll see you on the other side.
Thank you very much, too. Thank you.
Thank you.